Welcome back. This is episode number 279. Today we have a returning guest. His name is Frederick Joy. We spoke to Fred back in episode number 77 and 83. So it's been a long while and it's great to have him back so we can catch up on what he's been doing with Arcanis. Fred is the co-founder of Arcanis. It is a premier Swiss software development outsourcing firm based here in the Philippines. So if you want to know more about that, listen to this episode. As it says on the label, they specialize in development in high-end tech roles, specifically for the tech industry when they are building out their development teams. It's a very specific niche, but super important in today's world where the vast majority of businesses are either tech businesses or have a heavy involvement in tech. And of course, building those teams is a really tough and expensive task. So if you're into any of that, listen to this podcast with Arcanis. If you're not into the development scene, please still do listen because there's a lot of insight about generally recruitment, about outsourcing, and developer jobs in general. So I really enjoyed this conversation with Fred. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/279. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff, and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients, or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA or go to our website and we will have links there. Okay, so I'm joined by Frederick Joy of Arcanis. Hi, Fred. How are you?
Hi, Derek. I'm good. Thanks.
Good. You are the co-founder of Arcanis. You are down there in Cebu. I've had the pleasure of visiting you and your facility and seeing the incredible stuff you're doing down there. Can you just start by describing what Arcanis is and what you get up to down there in Cebu?
Yes, absolutely. So Arcanis has been established in 2010, so it's been 10 years that we're running. We specifically specialized in building long-term dedicated teams of developers for tech-enabled companies. So basically, we do technical team extensions on the long term.
Right. And so there's a little bit of ambiguity over what exactly outsourcing is sometimes. You know, people think it's a little bit like Upwork. People often confuse outsourcing with agency work, which is ongoing, but it's not their staffing. People, especially in the IT, can confuse it with project-based work. You know, how does it all sort of gel together and what specifically does Arcanis do?
Yeah, so each one of the ways to work that you have mentioned is different and has different needs, different setups. And so the one that we really are focusing on is building team extensions for our clients that are mostly in Europe and in Australia. So it's really a company that wants to hire more people on the long run, but want to have maybe the flexibility and cost benefits of having them in another office in the Philippines. It's usually projects that never really end because there's a huge learning curve that we are, we're training our developers to work on the client's products. So our clients are mainly product-based. It's not just a one-shot project that our people work on.
Yeah, and Arcanis, just to be specific, you are very much in the sort of highly technical end of developers and tech. And is there anything you do or don't do within those areas? It gets pretty deep and technical,
Right.
isn't
So, yeah, you're right to have mentioned that. So, usually the projects we work on are rather technical. There's a high learning curve. That's why the long-term aspect comes into play to get the most of this outsourcing relationship. Now, there's nothing much we don't do in terms of the industries we work in. We have, of course, a limit in terms of how much business knowledge our developers or how much experience they can have in specific industries that are sometimes really hard to get in Cebu or in some other places, or are simply impossible to outsource because there are some kinds of jobs that you cannot really outsource. But what we focus mostly is in terms of technologies that our clients use, and then what we do with the technologies they need developers for is find the right fit for them. So we're mostly focused on the technologies rather than the industries.
And so, this is the melding of and I suppose to someone unacquainted, it sounds pretty niche within niche, but it's basically staff augmentation within a sector, which is the tech and dev sector, which is generally very hard to find good talent. And when you can find good talent, it's hard to retain good talent. And if you do manage to find good talent, it's often at a huge cost if you're recruiting locally. So I suppose you attend to all of those pain points in that you help find and recruit your specialists in the area. So you make sure that these people are working well and happy in the environment. And then of course there is a cost saving attached to that as well.
Yes, that's exactly it. So we there's a large supply of developers in Cebu as well as in Manila. We found that Cebu was the right place to do it because of the English level. Also, communication is very important when we work remotely. And our job is to from this large pool of developers find really the best ones. So we usually hire only 5% of the people that walk through the door for interviews. And assess them against a certain set of skills. So it's not just technical skills, but it's also communication skills, business understanding, and so on. And so that's the first part. And then since the pool is rather large, we can offer a lot of flexibility as well to the people who want to work with us in terms of the clients who want to work with us. And obviously, being in the Philippines allows, in general, 50 to 60% of cost savings compared to what you would pay, for example, in Australia or in Europe or in the US. And in addition to that, we do not charge for all the hiring costs. So that's something we do ourselves, and then our clients just pay a monthly fee. To have developers work with them from our offices.
Right. And where is the delineation then between you providing the qualified and capable and vetted staffing and but then also deep diving into actually the deliverables and managing whatever projects they're working on? How do you manage that delineation between effectively providing the staffing and the environment versus even running projects for clients?
Yeah, so that's why we require our clients to be tech enabled because we can't do everything on our own, and we need to share the responsibility of a project with a client. We actually want the client to be leading the projects they're working on because most of the time it's their own product they're developing or enhancing or rewriting or whatnot. So we are effectively specialized in hiring the right people for our clients, but we are also a true software development company, meaning that we have the capability to run the projects on our own because we need to understand really what the clients are doing and try to help them if we see that there are improvements that can be done within the project. And so this is done basically by the project managers that are assigned to every client project. So basically they look into what's happening in the project on a daily basis. They don't really interact that much with the client, but they're really in the background to do some quality check of how the processes are running. And in addition to that, we have senior software architects that are looking at the code that our developers are producing. So we do very often code reviews for the developers working on each and every project that we have. And so that's another way for us to control the quality of the output we're producing for our clients. And of course, what we also require our clients to evaluate the work we're doing on a very, very often. So every 2 weeks, we'd like to know how the developers are performing, what we can improve, what has been gone well, and things like that. So we have a very tight control on each and every project that's going on. So we know, and the client knows exactly what's happening at what time.
Right. And this is it's very industry specific, isn't it? Because, you know, most businesses now have a website, they have some sort of tech enabled functions within their business, you know, as I say, sort of software's eating everything. But your target audience is specifically tech companies that is their main function to build these tech projects, and this is where you can really come in and, you know, help supply their core requirement.
Yes, that's exactly that. So the reason is that our developers are really hardcore developers, as you mentioned earlier, and only tech enabled companies would have such complex projects. So basically most of our clients are running on the technology that we are helping them build. So we are working on the core product of the companies that we're working with. We have made that choice many, many years ago that we didn't want to work on small scale corporate website projects as agencies would do. But we want to focus on really the complex and challenging stuff. And that's one way for us to, feel very proud about what we're doing, because that's what we really are interested in at the core. So Alan, my business partner, and myself. And also, since we're working on these long-term projects, we need these projects to be challenging, interesting for the developers. They need to be learning constantly. And those challenging projects are actually the projects that help us keep these people on the long run, because their job is never repetitive, is never becoming boring, and keep on evolving, because the products that our clients are building have to be on the latest technologies most of the time.
And over the last 10 years, there's been an increasing movement towards remote, or certainly an awareness or acceptance of remote. You have, you know, some of the more techie companies that are completely on a distributed workforce now. Yeah. Does that, you know, and so I hear about these things. There is quite a big thing. I wonder if that is helping or hindering Arcanis in the movement with the acceptance of remote work.
I don't know if it's helping us or hindering us, but the fact that remote work exists and has been accepted makes people more aware of the different ways that they can do remote work. So it can be do remote work with their own staff that they would pay at the local rates from their own company, and allowing their employees to travel, or also, of course, looking at this outsourced version of having another company dedicate some developers to them. Some work also with freelancers in different countries, but I think this is a model that is a bit more difficult if you're trying to build something on the long term when the learning curve is pretty high, because freelancers are not always that reliable. If there's another client that comes in that's paying more money for specific skills, then most of the freelancer would have the tendency to drop the client and just go on the higher paying job And we've seen a lot of people coming to us because of that particular issue.
It's a balance, isn't it? Because I think a lot of the getting people comfortable with outsourcing is often reassuring them that they won't get burnt again, because often people dabble in Upwork and freelancers and you know, and they just don't have the consistency, they don't have the quality, you know, and so they feel that just going to the standard employment model in their local market is the only option. And then so it's kind of I suppose the devil in the detail in terms of the different business models, but it really can be the difference between light and day, can't it?
Yeah, it is. And then I think some companies that are trying to, that don't know much about outsourcing and hear about Upwork or Freelancer or these websites, they just want to go the cheap route, because that's basically what triggers them to think about that, is like, how can we lower the cost? And so they would go to the lowest cost option. And they don't realize that it's just one guy somewhere to whom they talk, and the guy says, oh, we can, I can do this. And then suddenly after a few months disappears for whatever reason. And the job of outsourcing companies, be it probably in the BPO, call center industry, VAs or software development, is a bit of the middle ground. You get the structure of a company, so the reliability of a company, most of the time, but you also get the pricing advantage of having these companies that are located in lower wage countries.
Yeah, it's a paradox, isn't it? I mean, we in Silicon Valley, you're paying sort of $200,000 a year minimum for a developer worth his weight. And then if people sort of look to outsource, they want to pay $2 an hour maximum, and then a little bit disconcerted when they're you know, not reliable or disappear. And there really is a you know, a solid middle ground there, isn't there, that I just implore people to really investigate. And that middle ground is you know, pretty much places like the Philippines, like Arcanis, that are professionally run. People are being paid, you know, they're compliant, they have their government taxes, they have health insurance. It's just a world away, isn't it, from the freelancer platforms. And you see that in the quality of work and also the people that are working on those platforms and in those environments. It you attract the professionals when you provide the proper environments.
Absolutely. And it's also a place for these developers to learn. So it's like this whole infrastructure, as you said, the taxes, the offices and things like that. But it's also mentors, it's also quality trainings and things like that that any regular company would provide to their staff, but freelancers would have to take on their personal time, so meaning reduce their revenue to actually do that.
Absolutely. And the other side of the argument then is people, you know, I visit the US regularly, and you've got very sophisticated people in sophisticated companies in either New York or the West Coast somewhere. And they say, you know, how do you work with someone remotely? How do you even know they're working? How do you know they turn up? How do you sort of answer that question for the people that just can't get their head around someone working for you from the other side of the planet?
So the first thing is I ask them if they have some people that are working remotely in the office, and how do they, I mean, control what has been done. And then so first it's like, oh, yeah, it's possible. Because I think everybody knows someone that's working remotely. And maybe they have been working remotely themselves. And the other side of things is I think software is probably one of the first industries that started with this whole movement of working remotely. So we have very sophisticated tools that allow our clients to know exactly what's happening at what time. So there's the project management tools. They also have, of course, most of the time, they own the repositories where the code is placed. So they can actually monitor each and every movement in the code base. So that, I mean, they have their eyes on every single aspect of a project. In addition to that, of course, we send daily and weekly reporting. We have daily stand-ups, so the guys are actually talking together. So the I would say the lead on the client side is talking to the team in the Philippines. So the contact is so frequent that there's no real way to let things slip and spin out of control, at least with the model that we've put in place. And that's what should be the case for every company, is give the assurance to the client that their guys are working on what they're supposed to do. So this means also that when there's issues that arise and there's like blockers and things like that, that the outsourcing company would have to communicate swiftly with the client to solve these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're in a relatively, I mean, you're probably in the most cutting edge industry with tech people, because, you know, they're based on computers. They're all using the same set of project management tools. Everything is software based. So hopefully, you know, your industry is filled with more of the earlier adopters and see the value in this distributed option. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, I think there's probably very, very few teams that are working on, I mean, software developers that do not know about remote work or have never been working remotely, I'm sure, because even if the developers had to work in the office only, I'm sure they would have had to log on a Sunday on their computer to fix something that would have been going wrong in the many years they've been working for that company. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you mentioned just briefly there that you recruit. You can maybe correct me here, as a part of the for free, basically. Like, if you're recruiting in Silicon Valley, you know, it's a dog eat dog market there. There's not enough developers around. Recruitment fees can easily be sort of 2 months. So you're looking at sort of 40-50K. Whereas, you know, you're an all-in-one package. You also mentioned that you have the senior sign-offs, the project management, and the oversight, and run by obviously yourself and a professional team. So how does all this, how do you price all of this, and what are the approximate costs then?
Yeah, so we try to make it as easy as possible for a company to start, because what we know is once a company starts with us, they really never end unless the project is ending in a way. So we know that our clients will mostly be extremely happy. So we have to make it as easy as possible for them to start with us. We even have what we call a risk-free trial, where we tell them, we agree on the terms, obviously, which I'll go to in a bit. And then they start working with us for 2 weeks, and then they tell us if they want to carry on or not. And if they don't want to carry on, then there's absolutely no cost for them, except the time they've spent with us trying to set things up. And we've done this for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years, this risk-free thing. And we never had a client that would have stopped after 2 weeks. So that's why we know that making things as easy as possible in terms of onboarding is extremely important. Now, you were asking regarding the pricing. So it's, again, it's very straightforward. We have a monthly rate per seniority type of developers. So it runs between $3,500 a month to about $4,800 in average for senior people, for a senior developer. So the range is between $3,500 and $4,800 per month per developer. And that's an ongoing rate that includes, of course, the salary of the developer, but includes also the office cost, the computer setup, some software licenses, and all the perks that we offer our developers for them to stay with us in the long term. Because that's also, I think, the very important part of the business we're in is if our clients invest in training our developers with their knowledge, then we have to make sure that our developers stay happy, motivated, and stay actually with us as long as they're needed in the project. And I think we have some developers that have been with us for about 8 years on the same project, but they have been keeping on improving their skills because they go on trainings regularly.
Wow. And so you've got people working for the same clients.
Yeah.
They're dedicated. They're full-time staff. They come into your office, but effectively they're signing in and talking to their colleagues, I assume, in whatever country they're sitting in. What is the difference then between, you know, they're effectively an in-house team versus this outsourced team? It effectively is the same, yeah?
Yeah, it's the same. So, I mean, they come in our offices, they're part of our culture, they're part of the company, but they also feel a very strong bond to the client they're working for. And so that's a little bit also of the work of the client to make sure that the outsourced team belongs to the company they're working for. So a lot of our clients are coming a few times a year to Cebu to work next to our developers. And in some cases, our clients also fly our developers for a couple of weeks in Australia or in Europe for them to meet the rest of the team and increase the collaboration.
And that's so powerful, isn't it? Once people meet each other, once they see the work environments, once they see the real work being done, it's so powerful, isn't it?
It is. And then for our developers, having the ability to get out of the country and discover some places that they never thought they would maybe even go to. So, for example, some are going to Sweden to one of our biggest clients on a regular basis. It's always incredible because Sweden is so cold compared to the Philippines. So everybody just loves it and all the other developers want to hear about it. So it's a really super powerful way to keep people and to give them some unique experiences as well.
And just talk about, so you've mentioned there's a free trial, you've mentioned the prices, there's nothing on top of that. It's all contained and you know, it includes everything. These people are paid good salaries and they have their health insurance. What is the onboarding process if people are interested in this? You mentioned a free trial, but is the person recruited specifically for their account according to their job description? What is the typical onboarding process and time frame like?
Right. So there's two ways to find someone for a client project. Basically we have a chat with the client. We try to understand how do they work, what is their setup, what are their needs, obviously, what type of project it is. How are the teams composed? Who are the developers going to work with on the client side? And once we understand that, we look at if we have someone that is available, as we call on the bench. So we have a lot of developers that are working. I mean, most of our developers are working with our clients, but we also always have about 10, 15 developers that are either on training or working on some internal projects that would be ready to be deployed on client projects if we get the needs that they can cover. So in most of the cases, we do have these people ready that can jump in a client project within usually a week or two. So it takes us a week to kind of get the team together. So usually it's two or three developers that would jump on a client project when it starts. Plus we need to find a project manager And most of the time, we also assign a QA just to have a complete team. So this can happen in a matter of 1 or 2 weeks in general. Now, when some clients have really specific needs, it means that then we would have to go out on the market and find these people. And this takes a bit more time because every developer has usually 1 month notice with their previous employer. And we urge them to respect that 1 month notice because it's very important for their career to respect that time. And then we need, of course, about a month to find the profile. So it's usually within 2 months that we can build a team that would be not really in our core competencies. But most of our clients, really 90%, come within the range of services that we are ready to offer within a week or two.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that's the value, I think, in you just serving this very, I mean, tech and developers are a pretty broad market now, but you just serve this one niche. And so you can have that availability and I assume you know the good people in the market and you can respond very quickly to that.
Right. It's because we focus on a certain number of technologies and we don't cover all of them. And the reason is a quality reason. We can't be good at everything. So we want to be excellent at a few things. And those are the things we cover. And those are the technologies that we have people for. Most of the time.
What do you do, just as a side question, if, people, we see this so often, people are a little bit worried about starting their offshoring journey, and then they get so enthusiastic, they see, the price and the quality and the dedication of the staff, and then they want to add accounting staff, and they want to add sales staff and customer service. What do you do in that case? Do you send them down the road for those staff, or...?
So we've had a lot of customer service people and VAs in the past. So that's basically how we started. It was customer service, but then we for our own business, and then we moved on to software development. Then we decided to focus on that. But if our clients that have software developers with us are looking into some customer service people, VAs, so virtual assistants, and some other kinds of jobs that we can easily do, then we would help them out. Now, if they're looking at huge numbers of call center agents and things like that, we probably would turn to you, for example, Derek, to see, okay, is there someone, a provider that could cater to these specific needs? And then would refer them to these people.
Absolutely. And so what are some of the examples, or can you give examples of where this can be applied and where you've seen some real successes? Because people are very timid, I think, starting offshoring.
Yeah.
They sort of hear of the Philippines, they're concerned about the sort of potentials. But all too often I see it's not that in case of failure, it's actually, they need to expand. They want to get 10 people, 20 people. It's very often the other way, isn't it? In that people are just blown away. So it's just really getting them started. But what are some of the examples you have from your Arcanus?
Yeah, so I would say there's different categories of people reaching out to us. But basically, so we have the ones that already had done outsourcing and unfortunately had a bad experience. So that's a minority of people. And so they know how to get around and find another provider and they've learned from their mistakes. So these ones are kind of easy to handle. And then we have these clients or prospects that are exploring. So they've heard someone that has been doing outsourcing and it's worked well. Or they realize that they are struggling with finding enough skills at a reasonable price in their own city. So, for example, in Melbourne, I hear a lot that a lot of tech companies have come to Melbourne and the prices of developers has really increased so much that most of reasonable companies just can't find the right skills at the right price. So that's when they start looking at outsourcing. And then for these companies as well, when someone starts with them, for example, at a reasonable salary, then they realize that they can get a lot more with another company. So then the retention rate is actually pretty low as well. And so those are the companies that are really, I would say we can help the most, is people who are struggling to find the right skills at a reasonable rate in their country and expand from there. Because we have this also effect of being able to scale not just one or two developers, but scale from one or two to 20 or 30 if needed.
Yeah, I mean, that's the benefit, isn't it? You're there, you're flexible, and you can provide, you know, the teams as required. So it's super powerful, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's also the added flexibility to not have someone on the payroll on a long-term basis if there's like some emergency with some projects. We're always careful when doing like swift augmentations and ramp downs of teams, because usually there's a learning curve. We need to maintain the quality. So we look at how to best accelerate the project without adding too many risks. But it's also really a clear advantage that we can offer, because our team is so big and we have so many skills that are with us. So we can also work on small parts of projects with skills that don't need to be full time on the project.
It's such an exciting industry now, because it seems that everything is tech. The whole, you know, everyone talks about tech, everyone talks about startups. So it's such an exciting area to be in. Are you able to name drop any example companies or anything that you've built out or projects you have on the go?
Yeah, of course. So we have two clients that have started at the same time with us about 5 years ago, because there was one CTO catering for two companies at the same time, PaymentLogic and RegisterNow. We are pretty proud of how the relationship has been working, because there were two small companies that were looking for kind of one developer each at the beginning. And these two have grown tremendously to, I think, more than 20 people together now. And PaymentLogic has also been named number 34 in the Technology Fast 50 in 2018. So that's the startup ranking of Deloitte in Australia. And so that's really something we're really proud about, because I don't think they would have had such growth if they hadn't gone down the outsourcing route. I wouldn't say just because of us, but I think because they've made the choice of looking at accelerating their software development massively with outsourcing. And they were the ones, for example, that had really trouble finding the right skills and actually keeping the right skills for them at a reasonable price.
Fantastic. And software is such a, you know, it's sort of tech, but it's ultimately a people business, isn't it? You're not dealing with any physical products, you're not dealing with any manufacturing, you're dealing actually just in people. And with all of these software companies, the highest expense on any P&L is the staffing, really sort of a, you know, significant part of any P&L for any tech startup or most startups in general. So it's really critical to get not only the cost right, but the quality right, and also the supply, so that you can find the technical staff as and when you need them.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is why we've settled for Cebu, because it's the right mix of available skills, of cost, and English level also, because as I mentioned earlier, the communication is very important. And I think culturally, Filipinos are the friendliest people on earth, really. And so it makes working with them extremely easy and pleasant. And as you mentioned, since it's a people business, the communication and the easiness to work with people is extremely important and yields extremely good results if both sides like to work with each other. I think it's where it produces the most value.
Yeah, it's critical, isn't it? And, you know, I think quite often it can be overlooked, but developers are quite commonly more introverted people. They're not the best communicators, but it is so important to have a good level of communication
Yes.
with your teams, because it's not about the development, it's about the project planning, it's about the communication about the project, it's about the feedback, and it's about making sure you're on the right sort of wavelength with each other. And I do sometimes wonder how, you know, not wanting to sort of badmouth other areas, but, you know, the newer countries like Vietnam are becoming quite well known for outsourcing, and, you know, the communication can often be the failure point, and it's so critical to a project running smoothly, isn't it?
I mean, the countries that have a lower English level have different ways of working around that. It's just putting more people, I mean, more layers, and usually it's one lead developer that would be good in English that they would be paying a lot of money, and that would be kind of doing the interface with the Vietnam team, and then the European or Australian or whatever team. And this is something we actually don't have in the Philippines. And the collaboration is then more easy with everybody. So we can have everyone involved in the project, participate to the calls. And I think it just works better.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the cultural alignment, and it's just getting the people on board with the culture and the mission and the values and all that. It's the kind of the human aspect to it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So what would you suggest if people are interested? Again, people might be a little bit timid about hearing about the Philippines, about putting their development. What do you suggest the baby steps are to get people exploring this?
There's one thing that we've done really, that we're about to publish is an updated ultimate outsourcing guide for software development. That's how we call it. So we've built a series of videos and articles that explain all the ways a company that wants to outsource has to look at going through the steps of engaging an outsourcing partner. So that's one thing. We try to make it as comprehensive as possible, and that's specifically for software development. So I would encourage them to look at that. And also I would encourage them to probably contact a few companies in the Philippines and speak with the people if they're looking at how is the communication working with the Philippines.
And of course people can speak to you, and you help introduce people into Arcanis, and you work with the account, is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So usually when we receive an inquiry on our website or through LinkedIn, I'm the one who's responding to them. So I look through all the requests and I answer all of them. And that's basically the starting point of any discussion between Arcanis and someone interested. It would be through me.
Fantastic. So we're going to link to that ultimate guide. People can check that out. And if people do want to get in touch with you or check out the website, it is just arcanis.com, is it?
Yes, exactly. So the website is arcanis.com, arcany.com. And my email is fred@arcanis.com.
Okay, that was Frederick Joy of Arcanis. He actually spelt that website wrong. It's arcanis.com. And obviously reach out to Fred or go to our show notes if you want all of the information included in there, including that guide. The show notes are at outsourceaccelerator.com/279. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.